I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, economists
Breda Sharif
and
Jeremy Palumba
on Africa's newly ratified Continental Free Trade Agreement.
It's signed, but a lot of the details have not been fleshed out. I would say, you know, this is just the beginning, you know, not the end.
Last year, African Union members established the African Continental Free Trade Area in an effort to boost regional trade. They agreed to eliminate tariffs on most goods, liberalize the trade of services, and address obstacles to trade between African countries. The African Free Trade Agreement has since been ratified by 22 countries and is likely to take effect later this year. The IMF's latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa studies the potential benefits of the agreement that will establish a market of 1.2 billion people with a combined GDP of $2.5 trillion. Economists Reda Sharif and Jeremiah Palumba led this new research.
So just to put into some context, how important has trade or regional trade in sub-Saharan Africa been as compared to other trading partners like North America or China, for example?
So basically in the last two, three decades, the African regional trade expanded really rapidly. It more than doubled in about 20 years. If you measure African regional trade as a share of the total of their imports, it reached something like about 12 to 14%, right, in the last few years. Let's say compared to trade with China, for example, China represents a little bit more, maybe 18% of their total imports. So it's actually comparable to regional trade in other regions in the world, like developing regions.
And Jeremiah, you used the term game changer in this report. What countries are better positioned to potentially benefit from this trade agreement?
Well, the analysis shows that overall they all benefit, but there are a number of countries, like the small economy. You can think about countries like Namibia, for example, Rwanda, Uganda. The economy which are already more diversified, probably the most diversified in Africa is currently South Africa. The countries that are already sort of regional hubs, and you can think about like Kenya, or you can think about Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire. These are all countries that have a structure in place that create an advantage to take advantage of larger markets compared to, say, a resource-rich country whose economy is mainly based on exporting oil, for example. For this later country, like they will need to adapt to the change, and they can take advantage by introducing reforms, structural reform, like reforms in the agricultural sector, better seeds, high productivity. Think about like high crop yields. There, they will create a big advantage for this country. We estimate that that type of reform will give them the possibility to increase the benefit they may receive from a larger regional market by a range between 20-30%, depending on the type of reforms and the type of economy.
So that's very significant.
It did.
And so with globalization came winners and losers. Will there be winners and losers from this regional trade agreement as well?
I mean, if you look at it, if you take countries as units, I wouldn't say there are winners and losers, but maybe some countries would benefit more than others. So basically, our conclusion was that the countries that were relatively diversified with some kind of industrial base, more exposed to international competition, these countries would benefit relatively more and maybe faster. But in terms of within countries, we actually looked at the effect on inequality. And yes, it is true that in the short run, liberalizing trade could actually make some, let's say, types of workers kind of lose, right? Because you'll have a transition, some sectors may disappear, but then some other sectors may appear. So yes, we point to this issue, but our main conclusion is that this is a transition, right? It's a transitory phenomenon.
And Jeremiah, are the types of goods that are traded regionally any different than the goods that are traded with their more traditional trading partners like Europe or North America or China for that matter?
Indeed, the type of goods that African countries trade amongst themselves is very different from the type of goods they, for example, import or export from the rest of the world. Hmm. And there is a specific feature. The goods they trade within the Africa are usually high added value, like manufacturing goods, like motor vehicles, much less in commodities. Instead, when we look at trade towards the rest of the world, Africa is mainly an exporter of commodities.
Right.
But commodities doesn't bring a lot of development. So there is a big hope that the regional boosting regional trade will boost trade and production of goods with high value.
That's interesting. So infrastructure is an issue, and you mentioned in the report that there is going to be a lot of infrastructure requirements in terms of trying to facilitate trade between African countries. How much of an obstacle do you think that's going to be, given that there is a really significant infrastructure gap currently in the region?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is one of the key obstacles to trade. And this is something we emphasized, that for the trade agreement to kind of, you know, help trade, African countries will need to tackle these bottlenecks, and chief amongst them is logistics, right? So we put it under the big umbrella of logistics, but that's not only, you know, the usual infrastructure like ports or, you know, railways or airports. It's also kind of the timeliness, the time it takes to clear customs.
Efficiency.
Exactly. So it could be, you can call it soft infrastructure and hard infrastructure, but it's definitely everything that has to do with the ease of shipping goods from, let's say, the factory or the field or the farm to the port or to the border and then to the next country.
Mm. And if they manage to resolve those issues, that would also bolster their exports, right?
Absolutely. In fact, what we found is that the level, if you want, or the quality of your logistics not only helps trade on its own, but also helps the, if you want, the effectiveness of tariff reduction. In other words, if you reduce your tariff with some kind of low-quality logistics, you'll have some increase in trade. Mm. But if you increase even, I'd say, in a modest way, your logistics, the same tariff reduction will spur much more growth in trade. Mm. So it's key.
So this agreement has, in fact, been ratified.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it's going to take for it to be as successful as a lot of people, are hoping that it might be?
And this is not me saying, or the report, basically what many people have been writing. There'll be a lot of conditions, right? One of them is to kind of have a mechanism or a feedback mechanism, right? To understand what's working, what's not working, and also some kind of a forum between all the stakeholders, right? Governments, business.
As things progress.
Yes, exactly. Because it's signed, but as we mentioned in the report, a lot of the details have not been fleshed out, right? Like the exact tariff reductions, what tariff schedule, what are the goods that will be excluded, crucial things like the rule of origins that will kind of be applied, how to deal with existing agreements, how to tackle non-tariff barriers, as we mentioned, sanitary, phytosanitary quotas, things like this. So there's a lot of work. This is, I would say, you know, this is just the beginning, you know, not the end. But definitely cooperation at the continental level would be important, but also taking into account the political economy aspects, right? As you mentioned, there might be some losers and winners, not just workers, but firms, sometimes big players. And you'll have to take this into account and, you know, find ways to find solutions, I would say.
And Jeremiah, what do you see the obstacles to actually making this free trade agreement work?
Well, the agreement has been ratified. This is a big news. The countries are still negotiating some quite important elements of this agreement, so we need probably to wait a bit before the agreement actually becomes effective. And so this is a good moment for really identify what issues really are important for having the agreement to deliver, to be a game changer, as everybody hopes. And one is, of course, the agreement is about tariffs. And so our analysis shows that tariff reduction has to be widespread. A small tariff reduction, only a few items, strategic, as usually countries tend to do to protect their own interests, it will not help. It will not increase trade. If tariff reduction reach at least 90% of all trade, then we can see trade going up by, we estimate in the chapter, like about 16% above current level. So it's about $16 billion. And this can happen rapidly because changing tariff is, you do it by overnight. The second element, which is extremely important, as Reda was mentioning, probably even more important than tariff, all addressing all these non-tariff bottlenecks, which in Africa seems to be a drag to regional trade more than in any other region. And it's not just about money, it's not just about infrastructure, it's about regulating services for customs, because usually these are monopoly. There are coordinations to agreement to sign across country to understand how to smooth the process. And this is policy, it's not investing money.
So they need to fix the bureaucracy.
Yes, and have fixed all the same way, because they all have to trade on the same market.
Great, thank you both.
That was Reda Sherif and Jeremiah Palumba, both senior economists in the IMF's African department, talking about their research on the potential impact of Africa's new continental free trade area in the latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa. You can read the full report at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.